Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 164 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And we've got a cantina conversation today with Megan and Samantha Downing. Samantha Downing is the author of the recently released book, For Your Own Good. Samantha Downing is killing it in the thriller genre, and this was a book that Megan just couldn't put down, which says a lot. So if you're into the thriller genre or Samantha's other works, I think you'll thoroughly enjoy this interview. Hope you stick around. Without further ado, Samantha Downing.
We've got Samantha Downing, author of For Your Own Good. It comes out on July 20th. Samantha, welcome. I devoured this book. It was so creepy, but it was so well written. And I don't know, I guess I have a lot of feelings about it, but I'll start off by saying thank you. And I'm really excited about this one.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm so glad you liked the book.
Yeah, for sure. So this is your third book, right? Or
yes, this is my third book. My first one came out in 2019, second one in 2020, in the middle of the pandemic, and the third.
So, okay, so you've been really busy. Are those also kind of along the same lines of suspense-filled kind of crime, not necessarily mystery? I don't know what genre this falls into.
Thrillers. They're all thrillers.
Yeah. Because this
they generally call them thrillers. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, because I mean, this one is I guess the overall vibe, I wasn't, it was kind of creepy, but it was still I don't know how you managed to still make it lighthearted. I don't know. The overall mood, it was just it was different and I liked it. But you know, it's talking about these mysterious, deaths and, at this elite school, but then, you know, you were just kind of matter of fact about it. And Teddy's character, we can, get into him, but, so yeah, why don't you go over your background and maybe how you started off with your other two books and, you know, what that was like with being, it seems like you've been pretty productive the last few years, or maybe the last, you know, longer than that. I don't know how long it's taken you to write these stories. But yeah, let's go ahead and start there.
Sure. I've been writing for a really long time, mainly as a hobby. And the book that was my first novel that was published, My Lovely Wife, that was actually the 12th book that I wrote.
Okay.
So there was a lot of practice going on for years before that. And now I stick with that genre, is the thriller genre. That's what my contract is for. That is what I write. So they're all along the same lines. And I don't like books that are bleak and depressing. I don't want to read that for the most part. I have to be really in the mood for that kind of thing. My books are more tongue in cheek. And there's more satire in them, and there's more humor in them. So even though people are dying, because people definitely die in my books, there's a satirical, I'm making fun of something.
Yeah.
at least I'm trying to. That's the goal.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because now it's I'm excited to add your other two books to my reading list. Because, I guess, I don't know, I'm having a hard time articulating kind of it is a thriller, but you definitely kind of married that with that satire and the humor with that kind of seriousness of the events. And I guess it's the first time I've encountered that kind of writing style paired with the genre. And so it kind of threw me for a loop, but I loved it. And the chapters are short, easily digestible. After every chapter, it was just little hook where I was just okay, well, one more chapter. And before I knew it, I finished the book. I'm excited to get into your other works too. So what kind of research went involved into creating Teddy's character? Cause I don't know, he's kind of a psychopath, I guess. But he, you know, he's very like driven. He's got one focus, and that's, you know, bringing out the best in his students, and no matter who gets in his way, or, you know, he knows what the best for them is, and, you know, whether or not anybody agrees with him, he just wishes that everybody would let him just stay out of his way, let him do his job. And if he's got to get them out of his way by himself, then so be it. So how did, he's just a very interesting person. His thought process is humorous too. How did that go about, of you developing that type of character?
First let me say, for anybody that doesn't know what the book is about, it takes place at a place called Belmont Academy, where a teacher named Teddy Crutcher has just been named Teacher of the Year. And it's about time in his mind. And he knows what is best for his students, and he knows what they need to learn. And if everybody else would just get out of his way, that would be great. Yeah. But unfortunately, the other teachers and parents don't necessarily get out of his way. So that's kind of where the book starts. Mm-hmm. And Teddy is, I definitely think he's a psychopath, or at the very least a sociopath, blend of the two perhaps. And I think in writing a character like that, the key to writing someone who is a psychopath or a sociopath is that they believe. They have a belief system, and they believe it wholeheartedly. Whether or not anyone else buys into it or not, it doesn't matter. And the reader can certainly see the flaws in his thinking, but he can't see it. He's all in on his belief system. Mm-hmm, and you have to stay in that when you're writing it. You can't break from that, because he doesn't break from that. That's just what he believes 100%. And in reality, there isn't anything wrong with what he believes. It's his methods of achieving it that are the problem. I've already had teachers tell me they have read this book and they totally get where Teddy's coming from. They totally understand where he's coming from. It's just how he goes about it is not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I approach it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's fascinating. So did you... you don't have an education background, do you? Like, how did you did you talk to other teachers, or, you know, did you kind of study other personality types to get in that mindset?
In terms of the education part of it, I have a writer's group here where I live, and we have a writer's critique group. One of them is an ex-teacher who kept me on point to make sure I had details right about things that would go on in private schools. So I was lucky enough to have that to lean on in my early draft. And in terms of the psychopath, there are psychopaths in all my books. I don't know if I can write a book without a psychopath. So it's definitely something I've done a lot of research in the past, and in general for every book. Luckily we have, I think, in the world today, and certainly in the United States today, ever since Silence of the Lambs has happened, there's been a huge array of books, TV shows, and movies that have profilers on them, that talk about the different types of killers and who they are. So that is really something that if you're an adult, you have some knowledge of that. There's no way to have escaped it unless you purposely avoided all of it for the last 30 years.
Yeah. And it's just fascinating too. Cause just kind of getting there. Yeah. There's plenty of material to, if that's your thing, or if you're getting into like unsolved mysteries or what makes, you know, a killer tick, it's kind of like, or even like a psychopath or sociopath. It's like, what kind of, you know, those types of people, criminals, what have you. It's like, there's plenty of like material to go around to draw from and to study. And because, you know, Teddy is like a different type of teacher. He's a different type of antagonist, so to speak, although he would probably call himself the protagonist of his story. and I just thought, I was like, kind of fascinating. And plus, like, you know, he has these conflicts with other teachers and his students and former students. And it's just, There were just like so many twists and turns in this story. It was like, okay, well, you know, if you want to talk about him trying to make his students better, like that's the goal, is just to bring out the best in them, how he sees fit. And, you know, whether it's like, if he wasn't so arrogant, he would have gotten that A, like Jesus Christ. Like, well, if she wasn't, you know, she seems to be a little dishonest, so I'm just gonna be honest for her. I'm gonna take care of this. And I so like when you think about like those interactions, and I think about like, you know, the you kind of set the story up in the beginning, and you kind of trickle in these little situations that like just snowball and snowball and snowball. And then you know, it made me think like, wait, you know, when I see the characters, their actions, you know, because of Teddy, it's like, well, did they actually turn out to be better people because of him? Like, did he actually help it, even though help them become the best people, even though, you know, not in the way that he intended? And so I thought that was like really interesting. And I don't know if maybe that's what, like what you wanted kind of like readers to dive a little deeper into it. Cause it's like, even though this is more like plot driven, you do add like some of those interesting interactions or, you know, responses to Teddy's actions. And so I guess I kind of like want to go into that a little bit, like, you know, the morals, cause the other characters, they do some like questionable things, but because of Teddy. And so it's kind of like, okay, well, it's like maybe bad versus worse, or maybe it's like, does the ends justify the means? And that's also like in both of those situations. So I guess it's kind of like a loaded question, but yeah, I kind of just like thought it was interesting. And you know, maybe like what were your goals with that? Like kind of like what did you want readers to pick up on or kind of, you know, think about?
One of the things, I actually have this theme in all of my books, it's just far more prominent in this one, is the effect that adults have on kids. And in this instance, I wanted to explore the role of a teacher in the students' lives. And because at that point, this is high school, so yeah. World has gotten beyond mom and dad. They're out, you know, they're teenagers, they're out there, and they have other adults influencing them. And teachers spend a lot of time with kids. So what happens when one of them is a psychopath? And what happens if that's the person teaching your kid? And you wouldn't even know they were a psychopath until they did something, until they were arrested. It's like the infamous story of the, you know, he was the nicest guy who lived next door, and then they found 10 bodies in his backyard. You know, you don't know until something happened. So what happens when someone like that is teaching at a school, and what effect can that have on kids? And in this story, there are multiple point of view characters, including one of the students. So you see how one of his targets is reacting to what he's doing and how it affects him throughout the story. So I think it isn't the main storyline in my first two books. It's sort of a secondary storyline on how kids are affected by terrible things adults are doing. But I think it's one of those things I like to explore, because it's not just a crime itself. It's all the effects of the crime, how it permeates out into other people and affects so many others in ways we can't even perceive beyond just the person who did it and the victim. So it ripples throughout the community.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that in general is a fascinating thing to explore.
You know, it seems like you dove kind of deep into that, into exploring those kind of interactions. So like, was there any, did you like study any like, you know, adolescent or like youth psychology or, you know, or any other type of like psychology, like topics in psychology to develop these characters or develop and explore those interactions, like the effects of adults and their decisions and behavior that have on kids? Like what kind of research, or if any, went into
that? Specifically youth psychology, I didn't. I created the character of Zach, who is our teenager in the book. And just based on the type of, this is an elite school. These kids are wealthy, they're entitled, they've been raised that way, which is part of Teddy's problem with them.
Yeah.
That entitlement plays a huge part in the book as well, because Teddy is not rich and he did not go to a school like this. And yet these are the kids he has to teach. And I tried to imagine it through Zach, how kids would react to the type of things that Teddy is doing, specifically a kid that has everything at his fingertips, but he really doesn't. He has to constantly navigate. I see Zach's role, all of our roles in high school, but in this book through Zach, our role is just to navigate around all the adults in our life. That's all we're doing in high school, whether it's parents, teachers, coaches, whatever they are, we're just navigating around adults all the time. And we're adjusting and adapting our behavior depending on which adult we're with, because they all expect different things from us. So we learn how to do that in high school for sure, if not before, how to give the adult what they want so we can get what we want. And, or you become rebellious, right? And you don't give the adult what they want and then you get in trouble. So whichever way you choose to go about it, Zach is the kind of guy that wants to succeed. So he's constantly just becoming the person that he needs to be in front of everybody. And he's, when I was growing up, my brother was like that. So he was that like nod, smile, bring home the straight A's and then go do whatever you want, because nobody will bother you when you do that. If you do those three things, if you are polite and you smile and you bring home straight A's, nobody will ask any questions of you. You can then do whatever you want in your spare time. And that's the kind of guy Zach is.
Yeah, and I definitely got that, even though it's like, you know, it was very clear, you know, the Belmont Academy, the elite school, and the type of students, the type of kids, and the type of families that would be in this community. I still even like sympathized with Zach, like almost right away when he was pointing out, like, you know, they think my parents are doing it for me, but they're just creating more work for me. And like, he's like, I would have been fine with a B or B plus, you know, and it's just so crazy how, you know, that's part of the high school experience with, you know, even if I think that if Zach didn't grow up, even if his parents weren't wealthy, if they still just had high expectations of him, they would have turned out like they would have been driving him the same way. They would have been overly involved, probably the same way, you know, whether they came from a wealthy or versus like a middle class, for example. And it did make me like sympathize with him for a little bit. And then I just became a little bit more impressed, because when you say, oh, that he's kind of just doing and saying what he needs to get them off his back, it's like he did, you know, he kept his mouth shut like so many times, like during in his actions with his parents and with other individuals later on, where he's just like has to watch what he says. And, you know, partially because he's learned the trick of the trade, so to speak, but also because, you know, he doesn't want to show all of his cards too soon, or he has to watch depending on what he says or does, might take him somewhere where he is not going to be beneficial to him in terms of like his mission and what he set out to do. Because what I thought was interesting, it was like, you know, this book is very plot driven, but like, even though you don't spend a whole lot of time necessarily developing the characters, are developed without overly developing them, if that makes any sense. It's like you don't spend, because you bounce around and you kind of like, I get the hang of what Courtney's like, I get the hang of what Fallon's like, definitely get the hang of what Teddy's like, and you know, Sonia. But I guess maybe it's because you don't spend too much time with any one character, with the exception of Teddy, maybe him the most. But I enjoy how you like bounce around between point of views. Did you kind of like, did that develop? Did you have that in mind of like how you wanted to tell the story through different point of views? Or did it kind of just like come out that way as you were developing the story?
For this book, I did. My first two books only have one narrator and they're told in first person. And okay. I specifically started this one in third person, knowing I was going to have multiple points of view, and that this was a story that would need to be told from, in my opinion, multiple points of view. And so I did know that from the beginning. I didn't know who all the characters would be yet, but I knew that I would bounce around to different characters. And so you would get a more complete story of not just who Teddy was, but how people were reacting to Teddy and what they thought of Teddy.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good point. It definitely added to the story. It definitely like made the story more like, you know, where the reader outside the frame, but from multiple points of view inside the frame. And I think that was very well done on your part. So was it a challenge then to like switch from first person to third person and then one narrator versus multiple?
The first person to third person, I've written in third person before. It's just been a long time. So that did take a little bit more work. In this, when you're writing in third person, you still have the same narrator. You're just looking at it from different points of view. So that wasn't as difficult. The for example, in the first book, In My Lovely Wife, it's told from the husband's point of view. And so you see everything only through his eyes and you only know what he knows. You can't know anything else. And that's a very restrictive way to tell a story. But it's also great when you want to keep the story narrow and you want it almost claustrophobic. Like you only know what this person knows. And in this story, I wanted to open it up to other characters. And in terms of Zach, there was one other thing I wanted to say about Zach. The key to Zach, I think, being likable, and what I love about him is that he, although he's rich and he's entitled and he's privileged and all of those things, he's very self-aware about it. So he knows how privileged he is and he knows exactly how to use it to his advantage. And that's what makes him like, he's not stupid about it. He's not judging everyone thinking everybody should be like him. He already knows he's different. So I think when you get to that level of wealth and privileged, some people are totally clueless that the rest of the world does not live that way.
Right.
And some people are very aware of all the privilege that they have. And Zach, for one, happens to know the privilege he has and that he knows what he can get away with because of it. He knows exactly why. So
yeah,
that kind of makes him likable, that he is just that, like, yes, this is what I am. And I know this is what I am. So this is the way. So I'm going to use.
Yeah. And it's kind of almost like, yeah, like, you know, yeah, because I think a lot of people might not necessarily want to, like, you know, privileged, wealthy, you know, popular, I guess, which you could say. And you could see, like, Teddy is envious, too. He's like, oh, he tries to suck up, or, you know, he sees it the totally wrong, like, not the wrong way, but he sees it, you know, he just thinks the worst or expects the worst. Like, he's a little cynical and self-centered, and you know, he's annoyed, I guess, like a little tint of jealousy of these kids and these families, and that probably adds to him being so easily annoyed and just fed up and, like, you know, just like screw this, I do this myself, you know, I'm gonna take care of this, and you know, but it was just like, yeah, I like how you kind of go off of Zach on that, because like I kind of wanted to get into, like, you know, what, like, is Zach like your favorite, or do you have like another favorite character?
I like all the characters in the book for one reason or another. I mean, if there's a hero in the story, I guess Zach would be the closest thing, but I don't really do the whole hero versus villain thing. Mm-hmm. I love Fallon, who is an ex-student. And I think Sonia is hilarious. She's a teacher in the book. I think I try to make them all interesting and unique. So one, so you remember when you're reading, when you're switching characters around, you need the reader to recognize which character is which. So they need to be very distinctive if you're going to switch around characters like that. So when I move from Sonia to Fallon, you don't get confused on who is who. So,
and that's like, yeah. And I think that's like so difficult for authors to do, because I've read books where they're switching points of view and it wasn't always obvious. It just seemed, you know, like there have been points where I've had to kind of like turn back a couple pages and be like, oh wait, who am I who am I now? You know, and so that's, I was just like really impressed. I thought you did a great job of, cause it's like your tone didn't change. I guess that's what I'm going for. The tone, the overall tone of your messaging in the book. It was just very new to me. And so I'm like, I think it was just, that's what sticks with me the most. Because I'm a sucker for like character development. But it was, the plot was the driving force. You know, because the characters didn't change too much, you know, but it was like, what, a span of one academic year or like 6 months, 8 months, something like that. So, you know, and it is high school. So there's only like so much growth you can do in that span of time. But yeah, it was like, you did a good job of like, the tone was the same, but you clearly distinguished points of view. And like the different types of characters and everything. And it was very entertaining, and it was unexpected, I guess. I'm going to go off on a tangent. I'm going to repeat myself about this story, but it was just, I loved this book. So you released three books in like the last 3 years. One of them was like in the pandemic pretty much. How did those experiences compare with each book release?
For thriller authors in general, they like us to write a book a year. That's the pretty much what you do as a thriller writer. And the first book, well, I wasn't published and didn't have an agent or anything. So that one I just wrote in my own time. And that then when it came out in 2019, it had a huge push behind it. There was a lot of publicity behind it. And it was like a whirlwind, like you can't, it just, the, I don't know what other book debut authors, I don't know what their experience is. Not everybody gets as big of a push or as much publicity as my lovely wife had. It just seemed to be everywhere when it came out, and that was great. And then my second one came, the date moved several times because of the pandemic and the quarantine. And so it was originally supposed to come out almost exactly a year later in the spring, but that's when everything was shut down. So they moved it to the summer and everything was online. Mm. So everything was tone, you know, came down a notch. That was, he started it, which was about siblings and a road trip. And then this one, we're just coming up, but we're still doing online events mostly. And, so we'll see how it goes, but at least things are open now. Stores are open. People can buy things.
Oh,
and
for sure.
Airports are open because it'll be at the airports and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So each experience has been totally, totally different, all because of the pandemic. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when I interview all these authors, there have been a few of them where they were debuting in quarantine, so this was like the only experience they had, versus you know, other authors who maybe had been publishing for years and then they had to publish in the pandemic, and it kind of threw it for a loop. But yeah, you know, I know you guys like miss kind of these opportunities of like the energy and meeting the readers and stuff like that, and virtual is great. It's like another means, but it's totally an adjustment. And you know, it's kind of like you want to be able to like see your physical book in a store, and you know, it's for a while it was definitely tricky to do that. There was just different ways of doing that. And no, I for one am, you know, hoping for more conventions to you know, check things out and everybody to be safe too. But you know, I got started. I went to C2E2. I think it was like, yeah, it was like last year, right before, a few weeks before everything shut down, and it was just like crazy, like how easily that could have been like a super spreader event, because it, you know, it was just like so slow burning, and then all of a sudden it was like, okay, nope, like we're kind of screwed. And it wasn't just the publishing industry; it was like, well, all industries had to, you know, be creative. So no, that's interesting that you kind of just like, it was, yeah, your releases were kind of all jumbled in there. And so they're all like standalone novels, right? I'm guessing.
Yes. Yeah. So not a series at all.
Are you interested in writing a series at any point, or maybe thrillers don't typically, they're more typically standalones?
Well, only, I mean, it, typically that falls more into like the mystery thriller where you have a main character who is a private detective or a cop or whatever. And each book is like a different case, yeah. What have you. Since I don't write from that point of view, I don't have any law enforcement experience. So I probably wouldn't write from that point of view. I don't know how I would have a series. So I don't have any plans for it because yeah. In a series, you kind of have to have a main character that is in each one. So, you know,
for sure.
The main character yeah. has to be some, you know, like the Dexter books did it before it was ever a TV show. There was a whole series of Dexter books and Dexter
oh, okay.
character, as the killer. So I guess it can be done. It's just not done very much.
Yeah, that's true. Would you consider like, or have you thought about branching out into other genres or no?
Not yet. I'm kind of locked into the thriller at this moment. So, and there's not a lot of time in between. So to sure. work on anything else. So I'm always probably. Either writing the next book or in revisions for the next book and then trying to promote the one that's coming out. Thriller authors are always working on like three different books at the same time, you know?
Yeah. I'm assuming you'd have to be like pretty productive to even if you've like, you think you like, okay, you signed it, it's edited and now it's out for print and blah, blah, blah. It's still like, there's still so much to it. There's like so many a little behind the scenes things that you got to keep up on. So what were like your favorite, I guess a two part question. What were your like favorite parts to write? And for your own good, and like, what were the hardest parts to write in the story?
The favorite parts, I think, Teddy was always fun to write because of the way that Teddy thinks. So everything from Teddy's point of view, it was just a lot of fun to try to work out. My least favorite, I don't know. It's always sad when a character has to die. I mean, there are characters die in this book, and then when I write, typically there are multiple twists in the book or multiple reveals in the book, and my hardest part when I'm writing, because I do not plot my books at all, they are totally written organically, so when I get to a point where there's a big reveal or a big twist, the hardest thing part for me is the recovery afterwards. Okay, so now I've done the big twist, but now what? Now the characters have to, the twist has changed things. So there's almost like a recovery period post-twist before I can get the story moving.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's like, I guess I didn't really think about it that way where you're building up to it. And then now that you've done it and you got that out of the way, and then you're like, okay, wait, now what? Like, what?
Yeah,
how do I keep this going? And you know,
because you got to build up to something else after it. And that's since I don't plot, I don't know what that is yet.
I have to figure it out. That's so. Let's just. I guess it's just your writing process. Have you ever thought about doing it differently, or that's just maybe, or is it just like you don't have time?
I tried that. I tried it with my second book. My editor wanted a synopsis for my second book. I didn't even know what a synopsis was, and I had to Google it. And so I had never done any plotting or anything. So I wrote a synopsis. I just made stuff up and wrote it, and it was approved. And then I had to write a book based on it. It was terrible because I apparently, when I know what's going to happen, I telegraph it throughout the whole book. So the book was completely predictable, and it's not a good idea for me to know what happens next. I have to sort of, the fun in writing for me is discovering the story. That's the fun part. That's the only fun part for me, is writing that initial story and discovering the story for myself the same way a reader.
Yeah, and that's like that's so different, I guess. Or that's like, or you make a good point. I imagine that's like how it is for a lot of writers, and for you to kind of just I like that. I like how you're like, well, you know, how you're like, I like to write it how like the reader's kind of figuring it out or receiving the content. You kind of like how you kind of, that's how you like to push it out there or to to lay it out. So no, that'll be interesting if I, you know, get to your two other books and to compare the first one and the second one, even also with the third one, because it's interesting that you say that, like, oh, it was just so the second one was predictable because I had already known where it was gonna go. And so that's,
well,
I
no guess no like, we threw the book out no we threw that book
oh,
out.
Okay, then maybe it cut out when
we threw the we threw the entire book out, and I wrote my second book that got published. I had to write it in 3.5 months because we had just wasted a bunch of time on the synopsis.
Oh, okay. So then maybe maybe the internet cut out when you were explaining that.
Yeah, we discovered that process did not work. So I don't ever have to write a synopsis again.
Okay. So you got out of it the hard way, I guess. So
yeah, like, definitely.
No one's ever going to ask you to do that again.
No, I hope not.
That's so funny. Oh, that's great, though, I guess. It's just, well, you gave it a shot, right? Like,
I did what they told me to do.
Right. Oh, that's so funny. That's great. So let me see here. I want to make sure I get through my, so your writing process hasn't really changed with those three books. Like, you see what works for you. You know, how you need to do it to get it done and to do your best work. And, that's good. Yeah. Cause I'm like,
yeah, I still write. I write.
And I'm like, yeah,
I write every day. I write every morning, and I write far more than is ever in a book. And which is not to say I overwrite. There are people that overwrite. A thriller is about 85,000 words. There are some people that write 110,000 and then they have to cut 25,000 words. I don't do that. But I start books all the time that don't go anywhere because I don't plot. So sometimes my ideas go nowhere, and I'll write 20,000 words of something I think is going to be a book. And then I decide it's not going anywhere, or I don't like it, or whatever. And I throw those out. So I write for every book that ends up an actual book, I probably write an equal amount of stuff that I end up throwing out. And it's all just practice. And it's all just because I write every day.
Mm. So do you read a lot too? Like how do you, if you don't know where it's going to go before you write it, like where do these like ideas, like where, what kind of like starts it?
The first chapter is when the first decisions are made. So everything is open until you write the first chapter. So as soon as I write the first chapter, and so far, at least in my first three books, the first chapter has stayed the first chapter. First chapter I wrote in the edited version is still the first chapter.
Okay.
And I go from there and I think, okay, well, what feels right as the second chapter? Where am I going to go with this? Who is this person? And I have to discover who the characters are. And with every detail that you put down, another decision is made. It doesn't mean it can't be changed later, but that's how the story gets created. And so you start with, I don't know, a murder, a crime, a kidnapping, and the story has to widen. So you have 85,000 words you have to fill. So it can't just stop with that one crime. Something else has to happen. Either it has to get solved, or there has to be more crime or more characters or more something. I tend to write a chapter a day, and my chapters are short. And then I just think about it throughout the day. And by the time I sit down the next morning to write, I have an idea of what I'm going to write that day. Like, it's come to me, and several ideas will come to me, and I'll reject some, and then I'll hit on the one that I think is right for the next chapter. And it's a completely organic process. It's very weird. And I guess it's just something I've gotten in the habit of doing. Something I've trained my brain to do over years of doing it that way. That's just the way that I do it and the way I've always done it. So I just keep doing it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would say you've definitely got it down to your own personal science. Like, you've definitely got it.
Right.
Like, you know, yeah, like what it works for you, and you've been, it's really successful. You know, so yeah, don't, you know, keep doing what you're doing. Before we wrap up here, so you're still writing, I'm guessing? Are you working on more projects? Like, what do we have to look forward to in terms of, you know, what you've got next?
Book number 4 will be next summer.
Okay.
I don't have any details on it yet, but it'll be next summer.
It's like, it's when you put the pen to paper, or when you step on the computer, then you'll have it kind of a little bit figured out, or at least chapter one, right?
Right, exactly.
Oh no, I'm excited. I love your writing style. This book is so it's eerie, but it's still lighthearted somehow. I don't know how you managed to do that. At least that's kind of like what I got from it. And I would love to just any other readers who want to pick up this book, I would love to pick their brains too, just because it was different for me and I loved it. And it was like, I like, you know, being thrown for a loop and you know, it's just, you know, warning that kind of spoiler free, but don't get attached to anybody in this book. And you know, there are a couple of characters that kind of lay low that end up making big waves. And no, Teddy, I don't know. He was somebody I love to hate, or I hate to love. Like, I really enjoyed him as a character. You know, and this was such a cool new way to kind of look at the teaching profession and look at what a socio/psychopath in that profession might do, or you know, how far one might go to just do his job. And this is definitely one I'll recommend to like anybody. But plus, it's such an easy read. I couldn't believe how the short chapters, it was easily digestible. And after every chapter, you had the hook, and I was just like, ah, damn it! Like, I gotta keep going. And I got hooked, and I got sucked in, and I almost wanted more, but it was a great book, and I'm looking forward to hopefully picking up the other two, and you know, I'll keep an eye out for whatever you're, you know, you got next year on, you know, right on schedule, right?
Right on schedule. That's right.
Thank you so much, Samantha Downing. For Your Own Good comes out July 20th. You're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Yep, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. My website is SamanthaDowning.com. And I also mentioned For Your Own Good was optioned for TV. So for HBO Max.
Really?
Robert Downey Jr. and Greg Berlanti have optioned the book to make a TV series on HBO Max.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Who knows when that will get made? Hopefully soon. Right? But you might see Teddy on your screen.
Even. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for that then. Cause that I would love it. And if the right, you know, writers are involved and the right, you know, producers and all, if the team's good, then you almost can't go wrong. Because this definitely got a lot of material, enough shock factors, enough little twists, and all the characters are very likable and maybe that's somewhat relatable too, I guess, depending on, you know, what kind of personality you have. But that's awesome. I'm really excited. You know, I guess it's just like a little it's just always an extra special treat when literature goes to TV and film, and it's just kind of, you know, I want to be very excited, but I also, you know, I want to be very open-minded as well, because it's like, I don't want to be too, you know, I don't have certain expectations one way or the other, but I'm just excited to see what happens with that. But yeah, congratulations. We'll, you know, I'll look forward. I'll keep an eye out for you. And I'll also, you know, add your other books to my reading list, and I'll make sure to talk about this book to anybody who needs a new recommendation. I loved it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, nerds. And thanks for listening to this Cantina conversation with Megan and Samantha Downing. You can find any of the links to Samantha's Twitter, Instagram, website, or a link to purchase her book For Your Own Good over on our show notes page at thenerdcantina.com/show164. And as always, just encourage everybody to join us over at thenerdcantina.com/community and join the group, join the chats and discussions that are taking place over there, and share this with some of your other literary fans and thriller fans that might get into what Samantha's written here and enjoy this interview, diving into the book and a little bit of Samantha's history. With all that said, thanks again, and we'll talk to you again next week, nerds.